The Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live.
It's good Monday. Thanks for being with us. We are very much looking forward to having Espo with us today. Suns solar panel, because the Suns are in the playoffs. For the first time since I started this company back in 2012, I can say the Suns are in the playoffs. About that. And Espo's been along with the ride. Of course, he worked for the Suns for years and they blew him out and he started his own thing. Espo, Greg Esposito, will be with us. Suns against either the Lakers or the Warriors. This is also a majors week in golf. PGA Championships are this week. Bob Herrig, lead golf analyst with ESPN, will zoom in with us a little bit later on in the show at about 10:35 on a preview of Kiawah and what it looks like down there. The wind is not supposed to howl. How about guys like John Rahm and Rory McIlroy, and why has Ricky Fowler not been good this year? And on, we're going to chop it up with Bob Herrig. Bob, by the way, came to me via Pedro. So Pedro told me like 4 years ago, hey, you put on golf guys, and they're all good, but they're not Bob Herrig. You got to put him on at ESPN. And of course, we lost Pedro earlier this year. And so I, just a little soft spot, whenever I get Bob on the air, I may even share that story with him. Because I think you should know that Pedro's a guy who's like, Brad, I'll connect you. Here it goes. Boom, 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 boom. So that's that. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. We will have Espo coming up here at 10:20 and Bob Herrig from ESPN at 10:35. I think everything's going to be about the Suns. Because like the Diamondbacks are playing in LA against the Dodgers tonight, and I think we're starting to see them do the circling the drain. Usually it happens the first week of July, but they have four against LA. That is tonight. Now to the basketball. Now the Suns. This is fun, okay? I'm not going to sit here and go on and on and on about what the last 10 years have been like. That's already over and done with. But I do think it's important to note some of you have not experienced Suns playoff fever. I'm not one to do lots of cheerleading and all that stuff, but it is pretty cool when you see an entire community like paint their houses purple and orange, as some people did, or have the purple and orange toilet paper and their inside their house is all purple and orange. This stuff happened in the mid-90s. I got here in 93. It was 6 months after they had lost to John Paxson hitting the shot, Bulls and Suns, okay? So this is not a slight towards the Diamondbacks, who were born here and they won a championship here. Doesn't come close to Suns. Not a swipe towards the Cardinals. NFL and all that stuff, not a swipe. Not even close to the Suns. When things are rolling. And what's happened, because they haven't been in the playoffs for 10 years, there is a segment out there that says, I don't really sense that much buzz. Well, we are the biggest little city in America with all the major sports. And we have so many other sporting events going on. I'm emceeing a golf event tonight out of Longbow. We have the NCAA Golf Championships this week up in Scottsdale. We have a couple NASCAR races. I mean, we have everything here. And so you just try to explain to people, like, maybe in the 90s is a little different than now because the market is so oversaturated. But I don't think it is. I think if the Suns have a deep playoff run, a lot of fans don't know this team. If you're watching me, chances are pretty good you've consumed sports on a regular basis. Like, you're all over the sporting community, and that's fine. But there's people out there that, if for it to have that whole feel in the community, their moms and dads or teachers or doctors or lawyers, they don't eat, breathe, and sleep it. And that's what happened with the Suns back in the day. This was something where everybody was into it, and they loved it. So I'm going to bring you a little bit, though, because here's how it works. So the Suns have to wait to see who they will play. They may play the Lakers. They may play Golden State. They're not going to play anybody else in the first round. It's either Lakers and Warriors. And the winner of that game on Wednesday night is who the Suns will play. They'll either be on Saturday or Sunday. Okay, so last night, both Steph Curry and LeBron James said some things that I thought were really interesting. So I want to bring that to you. I usually don't do much sound, okay, but let's just start with LeBron and Steph.
We get caught up in a record sometimes. We get caught up in, okay, who has the best record? And, you know, instead of just saying who had the best season that year. And Steph has had, in my opinion, the best season all year. And it was the same you know, when Russ won the MVP, you know, Russ was, you know, first guy to have a triple double in the season since the Big O, and everyone threw the records out the window then when he won it. And I think, you know, you look at what he's doing, Steph is like, you know, Russ deserved it that year. And obviously I don't think Steph is going to get it because, you know, it's another conversation, but in my eyes, he's played the best basketball all year round.
Okay, that's kind of interesting because he leaves it open. So is it not the Joker? Is it not Embiid? Is it not Chris Paul right here in Phoenix? So that's LeBron on that front. But here's something interesting. So Suns are playing the Lakers on Wednesday night, right? So what does LeBron think about Golden State outside of Steph?
I don't know anything else. If you're looking for MVP, if Steph is not on Golden State's team, then, you know, what are we looking at?
Kind of a shot. Now you have Steph on his side of the street, he and Draymond Green.
You know, myself and Draymond, we've been around for a while and have seen a little bit of everything. And the patience and the perseverance through this season with, you know, a lot of new faces, a lot of young guys, a lot of injuries, a lot of different rotations, different lineups. I'm proud of the way that we've led this charge and set a standard of, you know, what winning basketball is, but also, you know, the understanding that it looks totally different than it used to, but at the end of the day, when games like these come around, that we're prepared for it. And I hope that hopefully that confidence is contagious amongst the other guys.
So it is a young team that Steve Kerr has put together. It's a team that has gone through injuries this year, obviously, with Klay Thompson being out. Here's more Steph.
This is a good experience for guys who haven't been in a playoff-type atmosphere to understand how important every possession is, and especially how the fourth quarter went where we had 15-point lead, I think, or something, and then, you know, they take – it was 17, and then they take a 2-point lead, and then we bounce back. So if we're really going to be critical about ourselves, we got to look at that first, you know, 6 to 8 minutes to understand you don't want to be in a position where you have to win the game twice.
So that is referring to what happened on Sunday night, and in the playoffs you can't have that happen. I think it's good for the Suns to get a break. I've agreed with Monty Williams' stance of playing guys and not resting. On Sunday, he decided to rest. Not a big deal to me because it's just one game. I have problems when it's February and March and April and fans come to games and they put down their hard-earned money and they walk in. It's like, well, wait a minute. None of these guys are playing and it's the only game I could go to? Or if you're going to invest your time into watching a game and say, I'm sitting here watching this and I'm seeing backups, if you're a sponsor and you put money into this and they're not playing, I mean, how does that make you feel? So the whole business idea, there's a lot about Greg Popovich I like, but I think that the league should have stepped in a long time ago and said, you're not resting guys in load management because there's just too much of it. And I had no problem Sunday with Monty resting because, look, you give Chris Paul and Devin Booker, when you get to the playoffs, you're going to have 91-89 games. The chances of the Suns averaging, and you throw this in my face if I'm wrong on this, but of having a 121 to 118 playoff game are slim and none. The game just slows down to a crawl. And they're hard mentally. You see teams that just melt under it. You see a team that will just get their doors blown off inexplicably and you think it's all over with. You know, one day they win game four and then in game five they lose by 40 and you're like, what just happened? Well, it's the mental grind of the postseason. The fact that DeAndre Ayton has had so much time off to me says, you know, you want to make sure there's not anything at all wrong with his knee, one. But two, it's just, look, he's going to be in for it. It's going to be something for him to have to handle, the grind. And so I have no problem with that. Would I like them to play the Lakers or the Warriors? Either way, I think if you look at the Lakers right now, Jared Dudley put this very well in some of its gamesmanship. Yeah, they're the defending champs, but you're asking an older team to come back around. You're asking LeBron coming off of an injury. Now, whether he was really that injured or not, I don't know. But I think Golden State is playing better. You know, so if it's the Warriors the Suns have to meet, versus meeting the Lakers. Either way, you got to go through a grind. I mean, the Suns have anybody that can get inside. Is Jay Crowder against Draymond Green or Jay Crowder against Anthony Davis? Go both ways on that. You know, look at Mikal Bridges being forced or Devin Booker being forced over on LeBron James. So the matchups either way, I think if you sit here and like, well, I just, if there's one little bit, it's that LeBron is coming off of an injury and they are an older team and the grind of the regular season, I think, took its toll on him. So on the other side, Espo, Greg Esposito, Suns solar panel. We will go further into Suns v. either Golden State or the Lakers. That is next. And then Bob Herrig with ESPN. I'm Brad Sussmat. All right, as promised, I am so geeked up for the Suns. I said I'm going to lead off this week with Espo because we have to have the Suns solar panel. Here's the thing on Greg. I'll just step back on this. Greg worked for the Suns when they were a train wreck, and he got out of there, and he's killing it now, but he still has the Suns solar panel, which is a premier place, if you're a Suns fan, to drop on in. It's not filtered. It's not rah-rah, cheer-cheer. I mean, there's some of that everywhere, but Greg's not a fanboy. Are you? You're not a fanboy.
No, I'm realistic. And yeah. I think having been part of the organization, it gives a unique perspective where, you know, I understand some of the inner workings, the realities of things as well. So I think it provides a unique perspective. Obviously, grew up in town. I've been a fan of the Suns since I was a kid. But that combining that with having been on the inside and the realities of things, I think is a truly interesting angle to come from with it.
Okay, did you choke up? Did you cry at all? Greg, come on, man. They made the postseason finally. You had to have been. Were you cheering? Were you jumping up and down on the couch? Anything?
I was a little emotional.
And
not cry, but like, especially on the episode we did right after that, where we were talking about it, it brought up a lot of things. I mean, 5 years in the organization, working there during five of the leanest years were difficult. Did 4 years of the podcast after that. In all that time, I've never had an opportunity to talk about playoff basketball. The last time I talked about playoff basketball, I was newly married, didn't have a kid, was like 100 pounds lighter. Like, there are a lot of things that have changed since I got an opportunity to talk about playoff basketball.
That's great. That's great. Who do you feel best for within the organization who still is there?
Oh, Al McCoy. Al, I think, is the guy you have to feel best for because there's actually a chance that he may get a ring. I mean, that this guy has been through everything this franchise has seen. I mean, since 72, he's been on the mic. And even if there's an outside chance that he gets a ring before he hangs it up, that's what I feel best for. And the person that I feel best for, there's a lot of people, you know, the Suns production team, Bob Adlock in particular, guys like that, Julie Fye, who's been there forever. I feel good for a lot of people, you know, Tom Leander, another one who I worked with, but Al in particular, because if they do find a way to pull this off, it would be a storybook ending for what's been an unbelievable career for Al.
All right. Sun solar panel. You can check out all the content that Espo puts out. It's good work. He does it and he gets after it. Do you have a preference, Warriors or Lakers?
Warriors. Steph.
So why not LeBron on a game? Did you see Jared Dudley's comments or is it Jared Dudley sandbagging?
I think they're sandbagging somewhat. And even LeBron at 70% with AD is, and the defending champions, is a better team than Steph basically by himself. Sure. Steph could go off, you know, Steph Curry could go off for 60 in a game. Maybe he can win one or two on his own, but I think that path is much easier in a first round series. The likelihood that Steph's going to be able to pull off the Herculean task of basically winning four on his own, not high probability, but AD and LeBron, even if they're not at full strength, a much more difficult task, especially for a team that's young and doesn't have playoff experience. You want to be able to ease in a little bit rather than jump right in the deep end is my thought.
Okay, you did not mention Draymond Green once. That is total disrespect on your part towards Draymond Green, Espo.
Like, purposefully.
You just don't like him?
No. Look,
Draymond Green, you tell me, on the Suns, Draymond Green, it was like watching DeAndre against Blake Griffin a few weeks back at Brooklyn. Just cheap shots, throwing them around, and DeAndre didn't know what hit him.
Yeah.
Okay? That's what's going to happen if it's Golden State. And they're going to let him play. And you know this, and I know this. It's going to be a lot of 87, 86 games. I don't think DeAndre can handle Draymond Green. I really don't. He's going to get in his head.
There is no way there'll be any 86, 87 point games in a Suns Warriors series. Too much offense there. But I get your point.
I'll bet you a ham sandwich on that.
Deal. We'll do lunch.
One game, 87-86. I'll be cheering.
I feel maybe after the third quarter. But Draymond, yeah, he could beat up on DA. But the fact is they don't really have a lot of successful bigs. And yes, my Draymond stuff is maybe a little bit personal because he's one of the guys that said you got to get Devin Booker out of that crappy situation in Phoenix. But look, Draymond isn't a superstar. He's a nice third guy when you're winning championships, but he's not a guy that's going to change the complexion, especially offensively, of a series. Could he get under DeAndre Ayton's skin? Sure. But the Warriors aren't a big team. So even if DeAndre Ayton's a little out of it, that's not the series that scares me with DeAndre Ayton potentially, you know, getting in foul trouble or not mentally being in it. But you look at the Lakers, that's size. That's a team where you can't afford DeAndre Ayton to be, whether he's actually injured right now or they were resting him or he's mentally not prepared, whatever the case, you need DeAndre Ayton at peak DeAndre Ayton against the Lakers. You can deal with him not fully being there against the Warriors, even with Draymond.
Okay, so I guess I look at the Lakers, and I'll agree with you on this one, because Drummond has come in, has made an impact.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Davis is making an impact. LeBron, we know what LeBron's all about. They've rested guys, and in this whole narrative of the last 6 weeks, it is what is wrong with sports to a certain degree, where it's, oh, they're injured, oh, they're hurt. No, they're just giving them the night off without saying they're giving them the night or the week or the month off. And so they're just building up to this. And I guess if I'm on the inside, I understand that. Monty has not done that. And if Monty is going to get into a street fight with his team, is Frank Kaminsky and Jay Crowder enough of a street fight bullying and baller? It's like when Chris Paul got mixed up. Who was that against, Espo, late in the season?
That was against the Knicks.
It was against the Knicks. That's right. And so he kept his composure. I don't think that Devin Booker or DeAndre Ayton are in a space that they've proven to me, at least yet, that they can hold their composure during a game. And I am talking about Devin in this one. People can get under his skin.
Yeah, and that's going to be where they have to grow up and grow up quick in these playoffs. I think Crowder and CP3 can provide that voice of reason in the room, try to teach these guys. Monty can too, but in the end, it's on them. Devin's going to have to cut down on the complaining because it's not going to go over great in the playoffs.
Are you bothered by his complaining like I'm bothered by his complaining?
I wouldn't say bothered, because after 5 years of what he's gone through, I understand frustration. Believe me, I truly do understand frustration. And I think that's coming out a bit, because I think mentally he probably thought, when we start winning, this is going to be different. The calls will come. These kind of things will shift. And I don't think he's felt that this year. But where you earn that respect is in the playoffs, where you get those calls, where you start to earn that respect is if you play well in the playoffs on the biggest stage. And I think he has to learn that and come up big here. DeAndre Ayton, I don't think he's a guy that's necessarily going to radically fly off the handle, but I think it's on the other end of the spectrum. Can he keep his composure in terms of not finding himself mentally out of a game if things get tough, which we know they will in a 7-game series, and they will get chippy because it always does when you see a team that many times in a row.
Because I've seen him pick up 3 fouls in 4 minutes. You know, that's happened with him. And on Booker's end, look, you talk about respect. Okay. Hey, Devin, you're going to guard LeBron or you're going to guard Steph Curry. Well, who's going to win the respect factor on that deal?
Oh, well, so, yeah. I mean,
it comes down to Mikal Bridges as kind of a wild card against those two, right? Doesn't it?
Oh, it has to. Mikal Bridges' defense hasn't been anything you can question, though. He's done that solid throughout. Where you have to wonder about him is the offensive end. Are we getting the guy who's been unbelievable the last 10 games and only shot under 66% from three in two of those 10 games? Like, think about that. He shot 66% in eight of the last 10 games from beyond the arc. If you get that Mikal Bridges, which you'll probably see a slight slide back from that, but if you get a Mikal Bridges that's consistent offensively, that's going to be one of the guys that will emerge in the playoffs and get some national attention for sure.
Okay, what kind of cheese do you like on your ham sandwich? Because look, I like provolone, okay? We'll go to Subway and we'll make it happen, but you don't think there's going to be any 89-87 games?
Not if it's the Suns-Warriors. Those are going to be offensive shootouts. It's going to be Those are going to be crazy offensive games because that's the only way the Warriors are going to win. The only way the Warriors are going to win is with Steph Curry being the offensive firepower to outrun the Suns. Now, I think in the Lakers-Warriors play-in situation, that's where Steph could swing things. A one game, anything can happen.
Right.
If Steph comes out and just has an unbelievable game, that's enough to overcome the Lakers. In a seven-game series, I don't think it will be, but it'll be an offensive dominated series, and that's the only way the Warriors will, I think, have a chance. I don't think they have the defense to try to shut down every guy that the Suns have.
Yeah, we played a clip earlier from LeBron, and it was just a short one, but he said, yeah, there's Steph and really not many other guys. Just like, okay, I'm just gonna throw it down on that. And
come on, that's LeBron, though. If they face the Suns in the first round, I'd be like, well, CP3's in the MVP conversation, too.
Nice
like,
player.
It's just mind games. It's like, it just, you know, it's somehow giving a compliment is going to get in Steph's head somehow before this one-game playoff. Like, it's all mind games with LeBron, and I never quite understand if they're effective or not. So,
okay, so would you call this a successful season if the Suns do not get out of the first round?
It's a tough question, because if you asked me this in November, I would have told you, yes, you ended an 11-year drought and that's a success. But when you saw how well this team played on both the offensive and defensive ends of the court this year, there is a window. There's an opportunity, a very small one, but especially with the way the West is this year, it's weird. There's injuries. There's all sorts of things that have factored in to make this feel more wide open than we've seen the West in probably the last 7 or 8 years since the Warriors started dominating back then. I think I will be disappointed if it's a first round out, because I really think this team has a chance to make a run if they can figure it out in this first round series, because I think this is the toughest series for them internally. They've got to figure out so much in a short period of time to put it together. So, yes, I think I would feel like it's a bit of a disappointment if they lose in the first round.
Yeah, I'm there with you, because, you know, I'll go back to the 93 when I got here, the 93 season when I got here. And people are like, wow, the town's really not on fire right now. Well, it's a different sports market. There's a lot going on. When you're out of the playoffs for 10 years, there's a lot of people they can't name more than Chris Paul and maybe Devin Booker. They're just not paying attention yet. Guys like you and I live it, eat it, breathe it. But if you're a teacher, if you've been out there, lost your job during the pandemic, whatever it may be, you're not paying attention to a basketball team. Yeah. That changes when a team goes deep into a playoff run. The great Julie Fi told me once, we just need to get into a second or third round playoff. This was a few years back, like 10 years back. So we just need to get into a second or third round so people can get to know our players again. And that is what has happened here. That goes back to the damage that was done by missing so many years of playoffs. So,
well, yeah, you lose a whole decade of fans.
Fans,
I mean,
yeah.
There's a whole group of people here that grew up Cardinals fans and not Suns fans, because the Cardinals had, you know, mixed success during the time that the Suns went on a complete drought. It's a very weird juxtaposition compared to the 90s that we're familiar with in this town in the early 2000s, where there was no doubt this is a Suns town. And I think it gets back there to your point. If they make it into the second round or into the Western Conference Finals, this city will feel the buzz. And yeah, and now that 10,000 people can be in the arena, I think you'll feel it in those games as well.
Well, in either way, Greg, either way, if it's the whole Beat LA thing, it's always going to be out there. And mm-hmm. now there's all sorts of people that moved out here from LA in the last year because of the pandemic. I've seen the numbers. But then you have Steph Curry, who's a very likable figure, and yet he'll cut your heart out. I think either way, this isn't opening with Utah. This isn't opening with, you know, Memphis. This is right out of the gate. It wouldn't shock me if they were eliminated in the first round, because you do have either team, they both won championships. This group has never been there. Jackie McMullen was telling me last week on the air that she said, that's a great theory, Brad, but Chris Paul will fight you all day and night on it. And I would just say to Chris, you guys have never, none of you have ever won a championship. So why would I think that that angle is not something to pay attention to?
Yeah, and I think it's definitely something to consider. I mean, Chris Paul, that's the knock on him. I mean, he hasn't been able to pull it off in the playoffs, but he's also taken teams that aren't as talented as this and done some impressive things as well. I mean, he pushed, I believe it was Denver last year to the brink with OKC. He took him seven games in that first round, and that team was completely a less talented team than the Suns. I mean, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander was basically the only other highly talented member of that team. So, you know, look, nothing. This Suns franchise has never won a title. Chris Paul hasn't. Devin Booker's never been to the playoffs. Sure, there's a lot that's against it, but there's a reason we love sports. That kind of team can surprise everybody, make a big run. And then there's the talk of not only this town, but nationally. Nobody expected them to be in the hunt for the number one seed either in the Western Conference. And they just did that for the entire year up to the final game of the season. So anything is possible. I know that's very cliche, but yeah, you're not getting a cupcake in round one, which you hoped you would if you got the second seed, but you're eventually going to have to beat a good team anyways. So figure out how to do it in the first round. And maybe that's enough to build your confidence where you can overcome some of those things that appear to be shortcomings.
All right, before you get out of here, how can people find you during the playoffs? What are you planning on doing? Wall to wall, 24/7?
I'm just sitting in here live streaming the entire time, right in this room. No,
you're not going to move.
you can find me on social or on Twitter at Espo. You can also follow the show at Sun Solar Panel. We'll be live streaming after every game. We're actually going to be doing live shows from the Chupacabra Tap Room in Mesa. So we're going to go out there with the fans and go live after every game and do post-game coverage. And then during the games, yeah, we'll be interacting via Twitter. So hit us up in any of those places. We look forward to what should be, at the very least, an interesting ride.
All right, that is the great Espo. You can find all this content again over at Sun Solar Panel and at Espo, Greg Esposito. We're back with more. Bob Herrig from the PGA down in Kiawa. It is a majors week. So we'll check in with Bob, good friend of Pedro Gomez. We'll talk to him about Pedro a little bit too. That is next. Stay with us. All right, as promised, and I've got to take a step back here before I bring Bob Herrig in from ESPN, and that is Pedro Gomez came to me about 3 years ago and said, whenever you do golf, why don't you have Bob on? Of course, Pedro was such a close friend of ours, and that's how I really got connected with Bob. And he's one of the best in the business. I had to pay a little bit of tribute since you and I have not spoke since Pedro passed. He was a weekly with me for 9 years, Bob, just as a backdrop. So not to start on the counter, but I've got to give him a nod because without him, you and I aren't chatting today.
Yeah, good for you. Yeah, it's still a stunner to all of us at ESPN, and so sad. Great guy, as you know, helped everybody. Just, you know, just the fact that he'd say nice things and lie about me was really just says everything you know about, needed to know about Pedro. So
he gushed
thanks
about you. He was just like, what are you doing putting on these other guys? Go get Bob. So, yeah. All right.
Good guy.
Yeah, he was. He was. PJ Championships. We'll delicately just switch over here. First of all, I've got in my notes, if I would have said to you when we reached out last week, we're going to lead with Richard Bland, would you have said what? But I think if we're going to talk golf this week, just to chop it up, fill the audience in on what happened over the weekend, because this is a phenomenally good story.
Yeah, you're right. I would have had to do a little scrambling. I mean, I would have known that Richard Bland is a veteran European Tour player. I'm not sure I knew that he hadn't won. I mean, guys don't last that long and don't win. But he won his first European Tour title on Sunday at the British Masters, which is played at the Belfry, which is sort of an iconic course. A lot of four Ryder Cups were played there. A lot of really good Ryder Cups were played there back in the day. But he's 48 years old. You know, I mean, it's hard to win at 48. It's hard to win your first at 48.
Yeah.
So, you know, he set a record, actually, the oldest first-time winner in European Tour history. So I think that's a pretty good story.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to get him in the U.S. Open. It's going to move him up high enough to get in the U.S. Open. It was too late to get him in here at the PGA. But great story. You saw the emotion. It's interesting, the Sky commentator, Tim Barton, who does some of the interviews, is actually his coach. So it was a little bit odd in that, you know, Tim was there in his role for Sky and his pupil wins, you know, and I think it was just as emotional for him.
That is a great story. I mean, that's a lot of toiling. It is PGA Championship week. And so we don't know if the wind's going to blow like everybody's expecting it to blow, I would guess. Before we even get into the course itself, what has struck you so far about golf 2021 in terms of storylines? I could go to the Tiger accident. I could go to the Super Tour and Rory saying, I'm not doing that. It's a money grab. Yeah. I could go to guys like Ricky Fowler. When I said you're coming up, people were saying, you got to ask Bob what's going on with Ricky Fowler.
Yeah.
Nowhere to be found. So there's a lot of storylines. What strikes you first and foremost as we come into the major this week?
Yeah, I mean, obviously Tiger's in the backdrop. That's a big deal, what happened to him. And the fact that we really don't know where it's going.
Right.
We're not sure. You know, there's just not been a lot of information. In terms of the stories, I mean, I think the big thing on tour is the parity. You know, we don't have a lot of guys who've won. You know, we only have two players that have won more than once in this season. And that's Bryson DeChambeau won the U.S. Open in the fall. And then he won the Arnold Palmer Invitational. And then Stuart Sink, who's 47 years old. We're not exactly expecting him to dominate golf anymore. But he won Safeway. And then he won RBC Heritage the week after the Masters. Those are the only guys that have won multiple tournaments this season. You know, Justin Thomas hasn't done that. Dustin Johnson hasn't done that. Dustin Johnson did win a European Tour event in Saudi and won the Masters in the fall. So I guess that, you know, you could throw him in there. But Brooks Koepka's won. Spieth has won. And we've had a lot of different winners. You know, obviously, Hideki won the Masters. He hadn't won in almost 4 years. So it's been spread out. You know, we're kind of used to somebody, you know, taking hold, being a force and winning, you know, four or five times. And we haven't seen that so far.
The win, let's go through a couple of those names. So Jordan Spieth, it's a comeback year, right? I mean, we're seeing him finally figure it out and come back.
No question. Yeah. I mean, you know, he was sort of trending in that direction. You know, he finally got himself into contention in Phoenix. He looked like it was going to be more of the same. He missed the cut at Torrey Pines the week before. Then he's in the last group in Phoenix, doesn't win, but he's close. Had a good tournament at Pebble Beach, had another pretty good tournament at Bay Hill, and then won the Valero Texas Open the week before the Masters. And, you know, was kind of on the leaderboard and hanging around at Augusta. So And now again, just last week in Dallas, you know, he was up there through three rounds. He's putting himself there again now. He seems to have, you know, whereas before he had fallen off, you know, he wasn't contending ever. So I think he would say he's still got some room for improvement, that he's not back to where he was, say, 15, 16, 17 time frame. But he's a heck of a lot better off than he was 19, 20 time frame. And I think he feels pretty good. And it's sort of a lost angle, but if he were to win the PGA this week, he'd complete the career Grand Slam. Mm. And that's something that was a big deal in 2017 when he won the Open at Royal Brookdale with that incredible back nine against Matt Kuchar. And then he didn't win the PGA. Justin Thomas did. And then Jordan actually didn't win again until, you know, 6 weeks ago. So, you know, that story, the idea of him winning the PGA when he wasn't winning anything,
right,
was sort of in the background. But now I think it's there again.
When I said that you were coming on this morning, I had people that said, you've got to ask him about John Rahm. And the Sun Devil Nation, very proud of how he's performed. What do you see out of John Rahm coming into this week?
Well, I think he's been the most consistent guy this year. Even though he hasn't won, he's been there a lot. And, you know, his wife had a baby right before the Masters. So I think, you know, that had an impact on his week. You know, he wasn't as sharp as normal. And, you know, he finally missed a cut here. He had the longest active streak of made cuts. He missed the cut at the Wells Fargo a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that is anything to suggest that he's off. You know, I'd be surprised if he wasn't part of it again this week. His game has been so solid, really, for the last year. You know, he had a couple of big wins in the fall, and he's been close a bunch this year.
I mentioned earlier, Bob, about fans asking about Ricky Fowler. So there's a Ricky Fowler following across the tour, and what is going on this year with Ricky Fowler from your view?
Yeah, well, he made a coaching change a little over a year ago. And you know, sometimes when you do that, you're going to take a few steps backward before you can go forward. And, you know, it's hard to know if he expected a quick fix or if he was sort of ready to endure the tough times to build back up, you know, because he's really fallen off, you know. He's nowhere close. He's outside the top 100 in the world now. I mean, this was a guy who wasn't that long ago. He was fourth in the world. So, you know, and he needed an exemption to get into the PGA. They gave him an invite. He had not qualified. He's got some work to do to get in the U.S. Open, or he's going to be looking at 36-hole qualifying for that. And when he missed the Masters, you know, he hadn't missed a major since 2010. He played every major, you know, from, I believe, the U.S. Open of 10 all the way through until he missed the Masters last month. That's got to sting a little bit. You know, there's a guy who's used to being there. In 2014, he was top five in all four majors. And now, you know, he's struggling to make cuts. So you hope that whatever he's working on is going to sort of, you know, bear some fruit here pretty soon.
Before I get you out of here, and I appreciate your time on this Monday, look ahead to the week. And some players or just a course, give the fans kind of paint a picture of what you expect this week, if you can.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned earlier you would think there would be wind, but it doesn't look like we're going to have a lot. That's unfortunate. I think that would make it a lot more interesting. But, you know, we're right on the Atlantic Ocean. 10 of the holes border it. The other 8 are parallel to it. I mean, basically every hole you can see the water, and it's not that far away. So, you know, in 2012, those flags were whipping pretty good at times. It seems like it's going to be calmer. And, you know, obviously I think that allows more people to contend. It takes away, you know, the guys who aren't hitting it solid are the ones who really suffer with the winds blowing. You better be on your game if the wind's blowing strong. So, you know, who does that suit? I mean, the course, I think, suits a guy like Rory, who won here before, Justin Thomas, Xander Schauffele. He's still got to hit it solid. There's not too many places to miss. there's not a lot of bailout. There's a lot of sand, you know, waste areas. They're not played as bunkers here. They're played as waste areas. And there's a lot of it. And so, and it's long too. I mean, it's not going to play the scorecard length, 7,800 yards, but it's probably going to play 7,600. A lot of long holes. So, and you know, the good news though is for these guys is it's not going to be terribly hot. It's not going to be in the 90s, which it could have been in August. If the wind's not blowing, you know, we might actually see some decent scores. So, and that's hard to believe on a course like this that just looks, if you go out and look at it, you sit there and you go, how do you get it around this place? It's pretty amazing.
I'll let you go off that and get back to what you do on Mondays. Appreciate the time and insight as always, Bob. Thanks.
No problem. Thank you.